to today's talk on Krishna and Vrindavan. So today we're going to be talking about Krishna's forest picnic, the one that he was planning from yesterday morning from our talk about him, and then how there's going to be some episodes that take place during that forest picnic, such as Rama stealing the calves and boys. And what happens after that. So there's a lot to cover today. And this is a really inspiring and important section for us to understand. So let's sing our invocation. Krishna, 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 hey. Krishna, 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 hey. Krishna, 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 Rakshamam. Krishna, 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 Pahim. Rama Raghava Rama Raghava Rama Raghava Rakshama Krishna Keshava Krishna Keshava Krishna Keshava Pahimam Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So yesterday we left off talking about how Krishna killed Agasura. And that was all an arrangement by Krishna's Leela Shakti in order to get the boys to stop playing and take lunch. Because the whole point was they wanted to have a picnic this day. And so, you know, the picnic had to happen and somehow they had to stop. But they were so engrossed in the play that something major had to happen. So Agasura came and there was that episode. And now Krishna says... the boys, and from text 6 he says, I think we should take let's start from text 5. My dear friends, just see how this riverbank is extremely beautiful because of its pleasing atmosphere, and just see how the blooming lotuses are attracting bees and birds in their by their aroma. The humming and chirping of the bees and birds is echoing throughout the beautiful trees in the forest, and here the sounds are clean and soft. Therefore this must be considered the best place for our sport and pastimes. I think we should take our lunch here since we are already hungry because the time is very late. Here the calves may drink water and go slowly here and there and eat the grass. So everybody agreed to Krishna's proposal and they all sat down with Krishna in the middle, and Krishna is like the inner part of the lotus flower, and then the boys sat around him in rows circling all around him like the petals of the lotus flower. And so they all opened up their little lunch packs and they started eating with Krishna. And Krishna, out of his love for his devotees and by his own potencies, he made it seem like he made every boy feel like each boy felt like they were sitting right in front of Krishna, and all the other boys were kind of like a little bit out of at a distance or something, that Krishna was only looking at him. So each boy was really basking in the presence of Krishna and feeling very, you know, much loved and the object of Krishna's attention. And of course, Krishna was the only object of their attention. So, then for fun, they wanted to make plates. So some of them had plates made of leaves, some from flower petals, some from tree bark, some found some flat stones, and they just had some fun making all these varieties of plates. And then they're eating. So they all have different things because, of course, Mother Yashoda cooked a lot and everybody had something that Yashoda had made, you know, thanks to Krishna who was distributing it. But they also had things that their own mothers had packed them. So they were eating and then one would take a bite and then he'd say, my food is so good, you have to taste this. And another boy would be like, oh, my mother's such a good cook. Look what she made for me. Just try it. So like that, out of loving friendship, they were wanting everybody to taste each other's food. And so they were taking a bite, passing it around, and just laughing and joking. And also just, you know, like naughty boys, they would sometimes play tricks on each other. Like one boy... for example, he had a samosa, so he took all the filling out of his samosa and threw one small hole, and then he packed it full of jasmine flowers And then he's like, oh, my mother cooked something so good. And he passed it to the friend. And friend takes a bite, and jasmine flowers are very bitter. So the boy would make a bad face, and then everybody would laugh. And then the boy who got the bitter taste in his mouth would go and like playfully, kind of like mock, beat up. He would mock, do like a mock fight, and playfully beat up the one who gave him that samosa. So all these things are going on. And sometimes at that time also, the boys would say, Krishna, open your mouth and close your eyes and you'll get a big surprise. So Krishna's thinking, oh, they're going to put some nice sandesh or some nice kachori or something in my mouth. So he opens his mouth and then they throw a flower in there, and then he feels this funny, like fuzzy flower, and he spits it out and throws it at the boy who did it. So like that, they're joking and teasing and having fun and passing their lunch around. And Krishna has this yogurt in one hand mixed with rice, and another hand he has pickles, and he's holding it and the yogurt's dripping between his fingers, and the pickles are, he's taking the pickles from one hand, mixing it with the rice and yogurt and eating it. And so he's using, generally like in Vedic culture, they don't eat with the left hand. So it's just very astonishing to, the demigods who are watching, that here's Krishna and he's just like eating with two hands and like that. So there's this verse that says, this is, so anyways, we're reading from chapter 13, and this is text 11, that Krishna is Yajna Bhuk, which means that he eats only offerings of yajna. But to exhibit his childhood pastimes, he now sat with his flute tucked between his waist and his cloth on his side, with his horn bugle and cow driving stick on his left, holding in his hand a very nice preparation of yogurt and rice with pieces of suitable fruit between his fingers. He sat like the whorl of a lotus flower, looking forward towards all his friends, personally joking with them and creating jubilant laughter among them as he ate. At that time, the denizens of heaven were watching, struck with wonder at how the personality of Godhead, who eats only in yajna, was now eating with his friends in a forest. So for the demigods, this is very astonishing, because their relationship with Krishna is like beyond reverence. They very carefully make preparations, and they do offerings just like we offer things to Krishna. So when we go on the altar and do like offering to the deity in temples, there's a whole procedure. There's a whole like achaman and mantras and bell ringing, and it's a whole ritual. It's a whole thing. But these boys are just taking a bite and moochie thing. Of course, it's not moochie because they're spiritual personalities. They're pure and they have spiritual bodies. But to the, from the point of view of the demigods, it's like, what is this? Very surprising. So then the calves. They were, the boys just, they found a nice place by the Yamuna where there's lots of grass, where the cows could sip Yamuna water and munch on the grass, and they thought the calves would be happy. But it says that the calves, they were allured by green grass that they saw further afield, and they wandered into the forest, just eating a little grass, going further, eating grass, going further. And they just kept looking ahead and thinking that the grass was, greener somewhere else. So, sometimes people ask this question, and sometimes we also may wonder that if it's so wonderful in the spiritual world with Krishna, then how could I have ever left? So here we see that the calves are right there with Krishna, and but they're attracted by green grass somewhere else, and so they wander away from Krishna. They go out of Krishna's sight, and there are many examples. For example, also like Sita. Sita was right there with Ram, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, her husband. She was his only wife, his most beloved associate, but she wanted something else. She got attracted by the golden deer, and she's like, "I want that." And she, sent Ram away to go and get it, and that was the cause of, so many problems. And then also, there's Sati, the wife of Lord Shiva. So she was there very peacefully with Lord Shiva, but then her father was throwing a party. There was going to be a big social event, and she wanted to go. So she wanted to go somewhere else to enjoy herself. And then that ended up being the cause of her death, that she ended up getting offended or getting offended that Shiva was offended and committing suicide. So it happens, you know, that the soul is with the Supreme Person or perfected devotee of the Lord, but wants something else, goes somewhere else, or, you know, somehow voluntarily separates from Krishna, thinking that they'll be happier in another situation. So it's not surprising that we, tiny little marginal living entities, have committed that same blunder. So the cabs wandered off, and the boys are having so much fun, they didn't even notice. Until after a while, one of the friends noticed, and they said, "Oh no, where have the cabs gone? Now we're going to be in big trouble." Because they're kind of new at this. They're just, you know, it wasn't long ago that Gopastami happened, their first day out with the calves. And so they're really like, they're trying to prove themselves too to their parents that, you know, we're big, we're capable, we're responsible. So now they're like, "Oh no, if this happens, this is very serious. You know, if we lose the calves, we're not going to be allowed to come out again. And then all these forest pastimes with Krishna are going to be over. We're just going to be stuck at home, and they're just going to get some older boys or men to take care of the calves, and it's just going to be the worst thing that could ever possibly happen." So it's all about spending the day in the forest with Krishna that's at stake. So they're very fearful, and Krishna senses that they're in anxiety about this. So he says, "Don't worry, you just go on eating and I'll go and bring back the cows. I'll be just back in a second." So so Krishna goes, and he's still got his handful of yogurt and rice, and he's just walking around, you know, slurping a little bit out of this hand and munching a little bit out of that hand, and, you know, going through the forest to look for the calves. And of course, Krishna's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He knows everything, and he knows exactly all that's going on. He knows exactly where the calves are, and he knows what's going to happen. But just by his pastime potencies and his yoga maya, he is pretending to be an ordinary boy. So Lord Brahma, he's watching from above, because like I said past couple days, that the demigods are very interested in what Krishna is doing. So one, because they're devotees, and two, because they're worried about all those demons on earth and whether Krishna is going to be able to kill them all and save them and protect them. So they're all watching. And then they had just seen how Krishna killed Putana, how he killed Bakasura, how he killed Agasura. And they were thinking, "This is amazing. Like, this is incredible. I want to see what else Krishna can do. I want to see more of this little boy's potencies." So Brahma, that's his motivation. That's what it says here in text 15. It says that Brahma had observed the activities of the most powerful Krishna in killing and delivering Agasura, and he was astonished. Now that same Brahma wanted to show some of his own power and see the power of Krishna. So, yeah, and once he's also a little bit testing Krishna to see if, because Brahma has a lot of powers, and he's seen Krishna is also powerful. So he's thinking, is this Krishna, is he actually more powerful than me? So let me exercise my powers and see if Krishna can overpower me or not. And if he can, then great, I'll get to see an amazing display of powers. If he can't, then at least we know who's who in the pecking order. So in this way, Rama's a little bewildered, and he's trying to test Krishna. Of course, another aspect of it is that Krishna wants this pastime to happen. Krishna has his own desires and his own plans to fulfill the desires of the Vrajavasis. And so he's actually bewildering Brahma by yoga maya to do this, to challenge Krishna in this way. So then what happened was Krishna went to find the calves, but he couldn't find them because Brahma had stolen them, and he had gone and put them in a cave. And so Krishna looked and looked and, you know, apparently couldn't find them. So he goes back to the cowherd boys to tell them, you know, the bad news. And then he gets to the spot where they were all eating lunch, and nobody's there. It's totally vacant. And the plates are there, and the food is there, and some of the sticks and buffalo horns, some things are there, but there's not a single boy. So Krishna's like, "All right." He understands what happened. That Brahma had also stolen the boys, and he put the boys and the calves in a cave, and he, by his mystic powers, he just put them into a deep, deep sleep. So they weren't afraid. They weren't feeling separation from Krishna. They were just sleeping like that. Srila Prabhupada explains that actually the boys and the calves that Krishna took were not the real boys. That just like when Ravana came to kidnap Sita, he wasn't able to take Sita because Sita is Krishna's internal potency. She's a manifestation of his eternal pleasure potency. So how can Ravana take Sita? But Mahamaya also acted, because sometimes Mahamaya has a Yogamaya is generally acting in Krishna's pastimes, but sometimes Mahamaya is also acting. So Mahamaya manifested a Maya form of Sita, and that's the form that Ravana kidnapped, that she was made of Krishna's external energy, because demons can never touch the internal energy of Krishna. So of course Brahma's not a demon, he's a devotee, but he's kind of acting in a way that's not appropriate. And so when he takes the calves and boys, he doesn't really take them, but he just takes Maya boys and Maya calves. He takes expansions of the original boys and calves that are made of the Krishna's external energy. And that, yeah, is a verse. Let's move it forward. Thanks. So then in text 18, it's explained that the reason that Krishna wanted this pastime to take place. Text 18, it says, thereafter, just to create pleasure, both for Brahma and for the mothers of the calves and the cowherd boys, Krishna, the creator of the entire cosmic manifestation, expanded himself as calves and boys. So Krishna wanted to give pleasure to Brahma because Brahma had this desire to see further manifestations of Krishna's potencies. Like, what else can Krishna do? What other powers does he have? He wanted to see that. So Krishna's like, okay, you want to see my powers? Here it goes. And so he just expanded himself into all these, you know, thousands of boys and thousands of calves. And he also wanted to give pleasure to the mothers of the calves and the mothers of the cowherd boys, because all the mothers in Vrindavan, they loved their own sons, but they loved Krishna even more. And they're always thinking, oh, I wish I had Krishna as my son. I wish I could feed Krishna. I wish I could bathe and dress Krishna. I wish I could hold Krishna on my lap and cuddle him and put him to sleep. And they had these desires. So Krishna wanted to fulfill their desires. And so he, for a whole year, he became the son of all the cowherd women of Vrindavan. And the calves also had this desire. I mean, the cows also had this desire, because the cows are mothers and they have motherly affection towards Krishna. And they're thinking, I want to be able to feed Krishna my milk. I want to be able to lick Krishna and cuddle with Krishna and just be with Krishna, as have Krishna as my little calf. And so Krishna became all the calves and he gave great pleasure to the cows, who are very dear to him. He's called Govinda, one who gives pleasure to the cows. So this is a way that Krishna gives pleasure to the cows. And also he's Gopi Jana Vallabha, and he gives pleasure to the gopis. And he did this by becoming their own sons. And also he gave pleasure to the young gopis, because it said that during this year, all the gopis got married to the cowherd boys. And so actually they all got married to Krishna by Krishna's own arrangement during that year. So, yeah. So an interesting thing is that when Krishna expanded himself into all the cowherd boys and all the calves, each one looked exactly as he always did. He was dressed with the same style of clothes. He carried the same things in his hands. In the same hair, the same eyes, the same facial features, and even the personality was exactly the same. Like, he acted exactly the same way that boy would, so that nobody could detect that it was a different person. The only thing that was different was that the mothers and fathers were more affectionate somehow. They couldn't understand why, but they were unlimitedly more loving towards their own sons, and the cows were unlimitedly more loving to their own calves during that year. So like that, then Krishna, he expanded. I'm jumping ahead, but let's go back to, he had just expanded himself, and then it was time to go home. They'd had a long day already. They'd played a lot. They killed Agasura, and they played on Agasura, and then they took lunch. And then there was the search for the cows and all this, and Krishna expanded. So now it was time to go home. So now when Krishna went home, he went home at the same time with the apparently the same boys and the same calves, and everything was just happened as it usually did. And Krishna was with, now when he went back from his point of view, he was just with so many expansions of himself. So he was looking and he was just seeing that I'm here with all, it was just Krishna and his expansions. That's all it was in the group. All the calves and all the boys were all his expansions. And so when they came back into the village of Vrindavan, I mean, just imagine so many, you know, hundreds and thousands of Krishnas just walking into Vrindavan at the same time, all playing their flutes and blowing their bugle horns and dancing. And just imagine that the potency, you know, of all those forms together. Of course, all that potency is always in Krishna himself, but just to see it expanded like that, you know, like so much more impactful than the effulgence of all of them. And so all those boys went to their own homes, as they always did. They interacted with their parents and their brothers and sisters, as they always did. And the calves knew who their mothers were, and they went straight there and were drinking milk from the mother cows. And but everybody was feeling so much love. And it says here in text 25, from the very beginning, the gopis had motherly affection for Krishna. Indeed, their affection for Krishna exceeded even their affection for their own sons. In displaying their affection, they had thus distinguished between Krishna and their sons. But now that distinction disappeared. So that was something very, you know, surprising to them. Like, usually I love Krishna the most, but now I'm loving my son the same, with the same intensity of affection that I used to have for Krishna, or that I still have for Krishna, but it's equal to that I have for Krishna. And it says that every day the mothers found new inspiration for loving their children as much as they loved Krishna. So yeah, Krishna was reciprocating with them perfectly in ways to every day to increase their love for him. And this went on for a whole year. and towards the end of the year, Balaram, he started noticing that like things are a little different in Raj, and people are acting differently towards their sons, and the cows are acting differently towards their calves. Like one day they were all grazing, and the cows were on the top of the hill and the calves were on the bottom. So the small boys were taking care of the cows on the bottom, and the grown cowherd men were taking care of the cows. And then all of a sudden the cows looked down the hill and saw their calves, and they just started bolting down the hill, like running straight down the hill with great speed to get to their calves. And the cowherd men were trying to stop them. And usually the cowherd men, I mean, that's their life. That's what they do. They're very expert at controlling the cows. But they couldn't stop them for anything. They were just getting, you know, knocked down by those cows. The cows are like making a beeline for their calves. And Balaram was watching this, and while they were running, like the milk was streaming from their udders, which it was the wrong time of day. Like they don't usually give milk at that time, but they were, had their heads in the air and their tails were raised. You know, when cows get happy and excited, they put their tails up in the air, and they were running with all this force with the milk, just like a stream of milk coming out of their udders. And, the thing was that these calves were not even like little babies anymore. The cows had already given birth to new calves. So it would be expected that they're going to be more, you know, concerned about the little baby calves and give the milk to the new babies. Generally, that's what happens is like the older, after a mother has a new calf, then she doesn't give milk to the older calves. But those older calves are big enough that they can eat milk and grains and other things. So, but this was very odd, you know, that they were so eager to give milk to these older calves, like the previous generation of calves. But yeah, that's what they did. They ran down there and they let the older calves drink the milk, and they were licking their, it says they were licking the calves' bodies in anxiety as if wanting to swallow them. They were licking them so exuberantly that it looked like they were going to swallow them. And the cowherd men, they were like, oh no, they were actually feeling like really ashamed of themselves that they weren't able to stop the cows, because for cowherd people the whole thing is like you need to have some time, like the timing of the milking, it's very important that it has to stop at a certain time so that the milk will accumulate, and then when it's time for milking it'll be full of milk. But they're like, now all this milk is just going all over the field and it's going to these older calves and anyways don't even need it, and what's going to happen with the new calves, and how about milking tonight? There's not going to be anything left. So they were kind of upset about the whole thing. And then, so they were running down the hill and they were angry at the cows, and they were also a little frustrated with the boys because they're thinking, well, at least you boys could keep the calves away from the cows, so that they can't suck anything. Just hold them, stop this situation, stop this problem from happening. But when they got down and they were about to, chastise their sons, and when they saw the sons, because the sons are also Krishna, then their hearts totally melted. They forgot all their anger and they just embraced their sons and held them on their laps, and were in ecstasy, just embracing their sons and smelling their heads, and tears were rolling down their cheeks while they were just remembering their sons, absorbed in affection for their sons. So the cows are absorbed in affection for the cows, and so Balaram's watching all this and he's like, "What the heck? This is so unusual," and so he started in his mind, he was just pondering, what is going on? Is this the act of some demigod or demigoddess or the illusory potency, or like, because he's thinking, how is it that even I'm bewildered? Like, yeah, generally other people, it's normal that other people will be bewildered, but I'm Balaram, I'm the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I'm never under the control or the influence of the illusory energy. Who else but Krishna can bewilder me? So he's thinking that this must be something to do with Krishna. And so coming to that realization, then within his heart he understood the situation. By Krishna's grace, Krishna allowed him to understand the situation. So it says in text 38, with the eye of transcendental knowledge, Balaram could see that all these calves and Krishna's friends were expansions of Krishna. And then he went to Krishna and he said, okay, I just saw something amazing. I saw that all these calves and all these boys are actually you. So, what is your, I'm really curious, like, how did this happen? Because that day that they went to Kilagasura and that the calves went missing, and all the, and Brahma stole the boys and calves, Balaram wasn't there. He had to stay home that day because it was his birthday and he had to, do all these ceremonies and things. Give charity to the Brahmin. So he wasn't there. He missed out on those things. So he was just totally lost on this. So Krishna explained the whole pastime to Balaram. And Balaram was just like, okay, I get it. So then, after a whole year passed, which Brahma was thinking was only a moment, because on his planet, time goes at a different rate. So he just wanted to do this for a moment. He didn't want to make a big disturbance. He just wanted to see what Krishna was going to do. But he kind of forgot that on the earth, a whole year had passed. So anyways, Brahma came back thinking that, okay, I'll go to the cave, I'll let the calves and the boys out, and I'll see, and Krishna will be thanking me and paying his obeisances to me or whatever. But when he saw that all the boys were there and all the calves were there and everything was there, and he was thinking, well, he started thinking, doubting his own power, like, did I actually, put them to sleep? Did my mystic spell actually work, or did I lose my power? Like, how is this happening? Yeah, and he said, and then he's like, well, or if they're still sleeping, then who are these second boys? Like, where did they come from? So Yeah, so then Brahma, he went to the cave and he saw that the boys and calves are still sleeping there. And at the same time, he saw that the same boys, identical boys and calves, were there with Krishna doing pastimes. So he couldn't distinguish between the two sets of boys. He just couldn't understand who were the real ones and who are the not real ones. And he was bewildered. So then there's this nice verse, text 44, which is very profound and which applies to us too. Evam samohayan vishnum vimoham vishvamohanam swayaiva maya jopi swayam eva vimohitaha. So it says that in this way, samohayan vishnu, that Lord Brahma tried to bewilder this. We see the mohan and samohan, and this word is. So mohan means to bewilder or to mystify. So Brahma was wanting to mystify the Lord, Samohayan Vishnu. He was trying to mystify that person or bewilder that person who's actually Vishnu. But Vimohan Vishvamohanam, nobody can bewilder Krishna, because Vishvamohanam, it is Krishna who mystifies the entire universe. And then, so then what happened? Swayaiva maya yajopi, that Brahma, by using his own mystic power, swayam eva vimohita, he bewildered only himself. So it's really, he was trying to bewilder Krishna, but Krishna can't be bewildered because he's bewilders the whole universe. So Krishna, using his bewildering power, Brahma, using his bewildering power, he bewildered only himself. So that's kind of like what happens to us in the material world. You know, we try to lord it over the resources of material nature. We try to, you know, do our thing here in this material world, thinking that we are the controllers. But like Prabhupada says, the more we try to control the material energy, the more we become entangled in her complexities. So we are thinking that we are in charge, but the more that we act from that illusory position of thinking that we're in charge, the more we become entangled, the more we lose control, the more freedom is restricted, the more our happiness is curtailed. So the opposite effect is there. So this is what happened to Brahma. And Srila Prabhupada writes in the purport, we should give up all our tiny efforts to defy the arrangement of Krishna. Instead, whatever arrangements Krishna proposes, we should accept. This is always better, for this will make us happy. The more we try to defeat the arrangement of Krishna, the more we become implicated in Krishna's maya. But one who has reached the point of surrendering to the instructions of Krishna is liberated, free from Krishna maya. So, and then he gives this analogy: as the darkness of snow on a dark night and the light of a glowworm in the light of day have no value, the mystic power of an inferior person who tries to use it against a person of greater power is unable to accomplish anything. Instead, the power of that inferior person is diminished. So that's what happened to Brahma. And then there's a description of, so then what happens? So Krishna, he's looking, he's thinking, the boys are in the, boys and cows are in the cave, the boys and cows are, who are these boys and calves? So then Krishna, to satisfy his curiosity and to satisfy his desire also to see a greater manifestation of Krishna's powers, he displayed that all these boys are Vishnus. So all of the boys are standing there and they all manifest in four-armed Vishnu forms, you know, with helmets and garlands on their necks and the goddess of fortune by their side with a kastuba gem around their necks, and in each of the four hands holding conch, disc, club, and lotus, exactly like Vishnu's, dressed in yellow silk garments with a distinctive Sri Vatsa mark on their chest. And every part of their bodies decorated with tulsi leaves that are exclusively for Vishnu Tattva. So it was very clear to Brahma that these were Vishnu forms. And they were smiling. They were smiling at Lord Brahma, like, see who we are? Now you know. And not only did they see the boys as Vishnus, but those Vishnus, each one of those Vishnus were being worshipped by basically the whole universe, as it says in text 51. All beings, both moving and non-moving, from the four-headed Lord Brahma down to the most insignificant living entity, had taken forms and were differently worshipping those Vishnumurtis according to their respective capacities, with various means of worship, such as dancing and singing. So all living beings, both moving and non-moving, were worshipping those Vishnu forms, and Lord Brahma saw that. He basically saw something kind of like the universal form, that the Vishnus and then everything in the universe being engaged in the service of Lord Vishnu. And Prabhupada explains that actually that's the fact. This is the vision of the Mahabhagavat, that everyone is somehow or other directly or indirectly serving the Lord, because everything is controlled by Krishna. Everyone is knowingly or unknowingly doing exactly what Krishna wants them to do. So in that way, they're serving Krishna. But in this vision, Brahma saw how they were, he saw that, how everyone's engaged in the service of Krishna. And he also saw all of Krishna's energies present there. He saw time, he saw desire, he saw karma, he saw the modes of material nature, and how they're all subordinate to Krishna. They're all just different energies which serve Krishna's will, according to Krishna's will. So Brahma had this amazing and sublime vision. He saw all that. And then it kind of like manifested in phases. You know, first he saw one phase, he saw the Vishnus. Then he saw everybody worshiping. Then he saw, you know, time and all these things. And he saw himself also standing there worshiping all those Vishnu tattvas. So he saw all the energies of the universe. And then he became kind of stunned. He was just stunned in ecstasy because he was overwhelmed. All of his senses were totally overwhelmed. And then at that moment, all of a sudden, the whole thing disappeared and he couldn't see anything. It was just like the curtains. It was like he was seeing all that on the stage. And then the curtains closed and the room was dark and he couldn't see a single thing, even himself. So that was Krishna's way of showing him that, you know, this is not by your power that you're seeing it. This is by my mercy. Only by my mercy can you have this transcendental vision. So then Krishna understood that Krishna, Brahma understood that he's totally dependent on Krishna and that he's, you know, absolutely subordinate to him. So then Krishna did something amazing. Krishna opened the curtain again, but this time when he opened the curtain, the Vishnu forms and all the universal forms and the time and the energies and the Kala and karma and all the people worshiping were gone. And what Brahma saw was Vrindavan. He saw Vrindavan in its pure, spiritual, complete manifestation. So he saw all the Vrindavan Dham as the spiritual world. He saw that it's non-different from Krishna's transcendental abode in the spiritual world, with all of its potency, with all of its beauty, with all of its effulgence, and all of its just the mood of Vrindavan. And the real Vrindavan, you know, not an ordinary place. Because when Krishna comes to perform his pastimes, because Krishna's performing this pastime of being an ordinary boy, then everybody just appears to be ordinary village people, cowherd men, women, and the trees look kind of like ordinary trees and the animals act like ordinary animals. But Brahma had this, that's all Yogamaya acts, because Krishna wants to have these pastimes and people want to have these, devotees want to have these pastimes. So Yogamaya covers all that, even to the Brajavasis. They don't see themselves as Krishna's eternal Nityasiddha associates who just came down. And Krishna doesn't see himself as God, but for Brahma, Krishna lifted this Yogamaya curtain and enabled him to see Vrindavan as the spiritual world. So this was his mercy. I mean, Brahma is like, he got so much. He was just, like Evan said, yeah, he must have. It was just like really tripped out and seeing all these things. So. I'm getting lost here in my verses. So text 59, it says, then looking in all directions, Lord Brahma immediately saw Vrindavan. And then Vrindavan is the transcendental abode of the Lord, where there is no hunger, anger, or thirst. Though naturally inimical, both human beings and fierce animals live together there in transcendental friendship. So then, yeah, he got that vision. And then the next thing is that then the yoga maya curtain closed again. So there's like different curtains. There's like the maya curtain, then there's like the Vishnu, like universal form curtain, there's the Vrindavan curtain. So he's seeing all these dimensions of the same scene. You know, he's just looking at the same thing and he's seeing it in all these different ways. So now the yoga maya curtain closes again, and now what he sees is Krishna. He sees Krishna, who now he understands is the absolute truth, is the source of all incarnation, is the source of all potencies, one without a second, possessing full knowledge, who's unlimited. But what he sees him is, he sees him as having assumed the role of a child in a family of cowherd men. And Krishna's just standing there all alone, just as he was before, still with his yogurt in his hand, dripping through his fingers. And searching everywhere for the calves and cowherd friends. So this, what he saw now was way back when the calves are gone, the boys are gone, it's just Krishna looking for them. So, yeah. And so now Brahma, at this point, he's like, all right, I have no choice. There's nothing left for me to do except to just go and grab hold of the feet of of Krishna and offer my dandavat obeisances. So he gets off his swan and he falls down like a golden rod, touching the feet of Krishna with the tips of the four crowns on his foreheads. And he bathes Krishna's feet with his tears, with tears of joy. And he's so ecstatic. He's like, he's getting up and then he's falling down again to pay obeisances. And then he's standing up and falling down to pay obeisances again and again, because he'll stand up and then he'll remember the vision that he had and he'll pay obeisances. And then he'll stand up and remember another aspect of the vision that he just had and pay obeisances. And because the vision was practically unlimited, he feels like there's no way that he can possibly express his gratitude and his devotion to the Lord. There's no way that he can, what's it say? He remembered over and over the Lord's greatness that he had just seen. And then rising up and wiping his two eyes, Brahma looks at Krishna with his head bent low, his mind concentrated and his body trembling and his heart beating, pounding in his chest and his body trembling. And he begins to offer prayers with a faltering voice to glorify Lord Krishna. So these prayers of Lord Brahma are a long whole chapter, the whole next chapter, chapter 14 of the Bhagavatam, which we're not going to have time to get to because we only have a couple minutes left. So I'll mention a few of those prayers. In tomorrow's class, I'll select a few of those prayers and read, and then we'll go into the next pastime. But remaining couple minutes, any questions out there from anyone on Zoom or Facebook? Otherwise, our 12-hour kirtan is starting in 2 minutes, so I'll just wrap it up and let everybody have a chance to fill up their water bottles and get in the right mood for 12-hour kirtan. All right, Krishna in Vrindavan ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaur Premanandi, Hari Hari Om.